like to make love with you. 'Cause you are a woman and I am one too. And you are my system, my lover, my friend. I'll be there when the day tries to end. I can't believe we'll leave you laying, but I feel a wound and wailing. I'd like to make love, love with you. I'd like to make love with you, not to you or at you, as men often do, to kiss you deeper if only one time, to sing a song without any rhyme. Somehow we'll be closer friends. I'd like to make love, love with you.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. This is my fourth anniversary show, and I think I'm bringing you a good one. It includes two very special artist interviews. But you're hearing this artist for a different reason.
I'd like to make love with you and begin the moment of something new. And that moment might happen to find your head on the pillow right down next to mine.
That was Teresa Troll, one of the early pioneers of the women's music movement. And the song is, I Like to Make Love to You. That was from her first album from 1977, called The Ways a Woman Can Be. These days, she's almost as well known for producing CDs for others, and she produced three albums for our first artist. And that first artist is Deirdre McCalla, and I'm very pleased to bring you an interview with her. She's been kind of a troubadour in folk and women's music circles for decades. 30 years ago, she released her first album called Fur Coats and Blue Jeans. It didn't really gain much attention, and she told me she was surprised I even had a copy of it. She became more known in 1985. That was when she recorded the first of three albums she would do for the Olivia Records label. Now, Olivia Records, of course, is synonymous with women's music. And this past year, she released her latest CD. The name of it is Playing for Keeps. Here's a quote about her that I like. It's been said that Deirdre McCalla's special brand of urban acoustic pop folk is delivered with an honest, open heart, a celebration of the power and diversity of the human spirit. And I certainly can't disagree with that. Before we start the interview, let's go back to hear just a little of a song from that first album from 1973. From the album Fur Coats and Blue Jeans, that was a bit of This Magic Moment. Deirdre, how would you describe your musical style?
It really depends upon what aspect of my music you're talking about. When it's me live, it's just me and my guitar. And especially when it's just a girl and guitar, it gets labeled as folk music. I'm an acoustic folk bass singer-songwriter. My studio music is a bit richer. When you're in the studio, you have the opportunity to use all the musical colors within whatever type of musical range you want to establish. You can call in all sorts of musicians. You can really take the opportunity to bring out the elements of song that it's hard to do by yourself solo, but when you have the richness of other musicians in the studio, it's quite wonderful to do. And that, when you hear the music, then you hear really a full range of the essential elements of folk and country and bluegrass and island music, gospel and R&B, and all of it comes together for me. So it's kind of hard to peg the musical style of the album because to me it really is varied. The song is the thing.
Who is your audience?
Who is my audience? Whoever shows up? It's kind of a flip answer. I guess I could describe who shows up to the concerts, though. I find that people who find resonance in the songs that I write, that find it relevant to their lives and useful in their lives to listen to, are thoughtful people, people who love life with all of its ups and downs, people who know that we laugh, we cry, we all feel deeply, and we move on. My audience has always been predominantly women. I've been doing this before there was such a thing as the women's music movement. And I guess I've always been a feminist, and maybe that's why it has resonated predominantly with women and feminist women. I'd say because I've been so much enmeshed in the women's music movement of the last 25 years, the audience is predominantly women, predominantly lesbian, but it's not that I sit down and write and say, now how am I going to attract the lesbian feminist audience? I write for myself. Writing for me is really actually a very selfish act. Writing for me is my way of ordering the universe, of putting the world around me into a form that I can understand the events that I am living, either living myself or vicariously watching others live, or things that are happening around me. Writing, songwriting and singing is my way of ordering the universe, and I feel very fortunate that my way of ordering the universe has resonated with so many people around the country, and that I've been able, because of that, to work full-time as a musician for a number of years.
Which songs on the new album are getting the most response?
The song on the album that's getting the most airplay, as I monitor folk DJ lists around the country, it really surprises me. It's a tune that I wrote honoring my mom's death. It's a song called Walk Me Down to the River. It has a gospel feel to it. It's always very gratifying to a songwriter when you write something that is so very personal, so very specific to yourself, that it has resonance for a whole lot of other people. And I guess that's why the song is getting as much airplay as it is. So it's kind of neat to see this tribute to my mother getting play around the country. I hope that wherever her spirit is, that she is smiling about it.
Walk me down to the river. Let the water wash over my soul. This has been a long, long journey. I am finally going home. I am finally going home. Lift my heart to the sky. It's a sweet, clear morning, children. Please don't cry. I've lived my life. I've had my fun. A new day dawns with every fading.
I know the song If God Only Knew has been getting attention. How did that song come about?
The song If God Only Knew was my way of ordering the events of 9/11. It's one of the few songs, actually, in my life that was not written with a guitar in my hand. It was written while I was driving from my home to a show about 700 miles away in Kansas, and thinking just about the events of 9/11 and how much the name of God was being bandied about in the media. Every aspect, every side of this whole horrendous event that we've been through was talking about how God was on their side, whether they called it God or whether they called it Allah. And I just started to wonder how God felt about her name being bandied about. This was a song that I actually made available before the album was released. It was as our troops were about to attack Iraq in March. I actually put this song up on my website for people to download, and a number of people did, and a number of radio stations around the country played this tune. And I just wanted my voice at the time added to the voice of protest about the direction this country was taking at the time, and the song did that.
God must be sleeping, God's on a bus, or out of the office on a really long lunch. She's held up in traffic or walking a beach. Clearly got somewhere she cannot be reached. For if God only knew what's being done in her day, she'd realize the humans have all gone insane. She must not have noticed we're not doing well, and when she sees this nonsense, she'll be pissed as hell.
Oh, if God only knew what's being done in her name. If God only knew. If God only knew. If God only knew.
And that was a very edited version of If God Only Knew. Tell me about Thanks for Asking.
Thanks for Asking was a song written on a dare. My Olivia Powell and songwriting buddy Diane Davidson once said to me that I was too nice in my songs, that my songs, especially my breakup songs, were always so darn fair. And she's like, Deirdre, don't you ever get angry. Don't you ever write from the perspective that, you know, I'm okay and you screwed up. And so this Thanks for Asking was my attempt to write a one-sided breakup song where I wasn't looking at both sides of the issue. And I'm not sure I successfully did what Diane challenged me to do, but it was as close to fulfilling her dare as I could possibly get.
It's just as well I bumped into you. I've meant to call about some things that belong to you. Still in the hall, a box full of albums, that bookshelf made of bricks. Oh yeah, you left behind the short end of the stick. There was a time when I could not see through the pain of getting over you. I thought this heart of mine would never mend, but I'm feeling much better now. Thanks for asking. Thanks for asking.
And since I do sort of a history show, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about some of the older songs. The title track from your 1992 album is Everyday Heroes and Heroines. Can you please tell us about it?
That song, I don't tell many people this because it just sounds too weird, was inspired by Joe Montana and Holly Near. When I lived in California, I was a really big 49er football fan. I still am a football fan. And I was thinking about Joe Montana and how was the star of the 49er football team at the time. But he couldn't be the star unless he had, you know, a Jerry Rice and the wide receivers and the running backs and all the people, you know, protecting him. So, you know, it was those everyday people that didn't get as much press as Joe Montana that made Joe Montana Joe Montana. And in that same weird connection, I was thinking about, you know, someone like Holly Near. And there are the Holly Nears of women's music, and then there are those of us on a slightly lower level, shall we say, that are still out there just slugging away, contributing to the whole cultural work that goes on. And Holly is one of those people that is aware of all of us on all levels, so I don't mean to set her apart as if she doesn't know. But anyway, it got me to thinking about just the people in this country, in the world, that get up every day and do their lives and do their job and do the work that is before them to be done. And it's really those people that keep this country, this world going, that make it all work. It's not a matter of a few stars that get all the glory. It's all of us working together every day.
Now back to your album, With a Little Luck. I'd love to hear about the song, Would You Like to Dance?
Would You Like to Dance is really me at a party, or me in my bar days or in my hanging out days. I don't do much these days but hang out at a soccer field. But despite the fact that I am a performer, in social situations I am actually quite shy. And really the first verse pretty much describes what I used to do, which is, I've spent the last half hour boldly holding up this wall. I'm a leaner. I lay off in the corner and kind of watch things going on and wish I could ask someone to dance, but rarely have the nerve. A lot of women have really enjoyed that song and very much understood how there's that element of the shy person in all of us.
I spent the last half hour boldly holding wall, hoping that I will or will not be noticed at all. Someone in the corner that I would like to meet, be a big blow if she said no. I'd love to talk to her if I could only find the nerve. Would you like to dance? Oh, there's still a little space out on the floor. And I thought that maybe
Is there a message that carries through your music?
The message that's carried through my music. That's interesting. I, again, go back to who the music has touched and possibly why. I think I'm a lot about being real, about being honest, about looking at the world from a, as much as possible, as much as humanly possible, balanced point of view that we're all innocent, we're all guilty in just about every situation. We all play our part. It is important to me to be myself on stage. I mean, when you ask if it's important to be out, it's important to be myself, and being a lesbian is part of who I am. That certainly was a process that's taken years to be comfortable with, to publicly being out. As our GLBT movement has grown stronger in the last 30 years or so and created a much safer world to be out in, it has certainly has become easier. You know, I play a lot of colleges, and a lot of those colleges are in very rural places. And to be honest, sometimes I do feel nervous about being out. And the way that I'm out is even very subtle. You really have to be listening quick to realize it, that the pronoun I just said was she or her or whatever in relation to a relationship. And sometimes I do get nervous about that when I'm in a rural area. But what grounds me is that quiet person in the corner who I can see is really glad to be there, but really nervous to be there. And I realize that it may be that person and maybe someone else, but someone in that room is gay. Someone in that room is a lesbian. And when I'm nervous about being out, I realize, gosh, if I'm nervous and I'm leaving town in the morning, they must really be nervous. And it makes me want to identify myself more, because I think that that breaks the ice, that that starts to create a dialogue and empowers that person, that one person in the room somewhere who may be afraid to speak, who is feeling alone because they're gay in this rural college. And it changes my focus from worrying about what do the other people in the room who are not gay or lesbian think of me to what can I do to empower that one person in the room who is gay and lesbian. So that's when it becomes important to me to be out, when I realize that in many ways, because I am leaving town, a performer who's leaving town the next day, I can afford that luxury. I can afford to take that risk. I can afford to reach out to other gay and lesbian people on the campus that I'm on, and perhaps by doing that, make their life a little easier.
Okay, I want to get back to the new album, and perhaps my favorite song from it, Mama Loves Me.
Mama Loves Me was originally just a throwaway tune. When my son was younger, especially, I used to sing to him a lot. It was my way of soothing him, of course, and I particularly wanted to soothe him on airplanes so that people wouldn't make us sit out on the wing. You know, people get nervous when you walk into a waiting area with an infant in your arms, like, oh my God, I hope it's not sitting next to me. And so I would make up songs all the time. It's not that our life is an opera with music going on all the time, but, you know, we do spontaneously make up things. So Mama Loves Me started as something I just spontaneously made up to keep him occupied on a plane one day. But when I thought about the words as it was going out into the universe, I actually said, whoa, wait a minute, let me pull this back, and developed it a little more, because the song is about different kinds of families, families with two moms, families with two dads, single-parent families, families of mixed races and cultural heritage. And I realized how important it is that our children, especially the children of GLBT families, have music to empower them in their lives, to validate their lives, to celebrate their lives. And I fleshed out the whole song, and I've been singing it for a while in concert. And before the album came out, what I would do when people wanted to learn the song and be able to sing it to their children, I said, you know, in the folk tradition, if you just send me a tape, I will sing it into my little, you know, messed up tape recorder at home and mail it back to you. And a number of people did that and have been singing it to their children, and I hope adding verses on their own that speak to their own particular family. Our families, GLBT families, need more music for our kids to just celebrate themselves with.
Mama loves me, yes, it's true. And my mommy loves me too. Mama and mommy love each other. Aren't I lucky to have two mothers? Daddy loves me, yes, it's true. And my papa loves me too. Daddy and papa love each other. Aren't I lucky to have two fathers? Mama loves me, yes, it's true. And I love my mama too. My mom is a single mother. Aren't we lucky to have each other? Sister loves me mighty fine. Her skin's a different shade than mine. And so is my baby brothers. We're a grand bouquet of rainbow colors. Small, but this I know, I'm bathed in love from head to toe. And even now it's clear to me, there are lots of ways to be a family.
Hi, this is Holly Neer.
Hi, this is Chris Williamson.
This is Margie Adam.
And you are listening to Queer Music Heritage on KBFT. Houston.
And this is a good time to remind you to be sure to listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Also, I invite you to check out my website at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can view the playlist and see photos of the artists and recordings, and listen to the show anytime. The next artist I'm featuring has been called by The New Yorker a folk rock goddess. She has enough respect within the industry that Patty Larkin and Mary Chapin Carpenter have sung guest vocals on her CDs. One of her songs has been featured on the TV show Dawson's Creek. And although the Glamma Awards were only given out for 4 years, 1996 through 1999, during that period she won 4 awards, including Album of the Year, Out Recording of the Year, and Out Song of the Year. She won that one twice, and she was nominated for 3 other awards. Her name is Katie Curtis. Now, I've just mentioned that she won several Glamma Awards. Glamma stood for the Gay and Lesbian American Music Awards, and I got these comments about Katie from one of the two founders of the Glammas, Tom McCormick.
Katie Curtis was, in some ways, in my mind, instrumental in making Glamma really happen. It wasn't until the first annual awards show, which was in 1996, that we first, you know, heard of Katie. So we had already been in the process of building Glamma, but Katie had released her CD, and she so much was the spirit of what Glamma was about. She is a great musician, an amazing songwriter. She has great stage presence. She's very warm. People love her. The audiences love her. And she opened up the show for the first Glamma. And she was just great. And she won a lot of awards that night and was quite gracious and surprised by it. And because she was on a major label, because she was such a good talent, because she was out, because she was just so honest, I knew that we had done something right by creating Glamma, because she really wanted to be part of that, and she really wanted to be open about who she was, and Glamour was sort of the only place for her to do that. And it was just a sign for me that we had done the right thing by creating something called Glamour.
Before we get to the interview, I want to share with you just a little of the title track from her first album. This is very rare and was only released on cassette. From 1989, this song is called Dandelion. Katie Curtis has released 7 albums since 1989, and they are wonderful. They combine her unique approach to folk music and her thoughtful lyrics. I've been a fan of hers for quite a while, so I was very pleased when I was able to interview her while she was in Houston in October for the Houston Women's Festival. Katie, what was it like growing up in Maine?
I actually loved growing up in Maine up until I was a teenager, because it was really beautiful. We lived by the ocean. I feel very connected to the ocean. I love, you know, nighttime walking, you know, even actually through high school, I loved that part of Maine, being able to, like, you know, go to the ocean after dark and walk and hear the waves. And, you know, that's pretty intense. So I loved that. But I grew up in a small town, and I really, there was not much awareness of singer-songwriters or any original music. There were cover bands. And you know, my only exposure to live original music was, you know, you go to the arena show to see James Taylor. You know, like, that was my exposure to what I wanted to do one day. And so also, there were not a lot of role models for me as a young lesbian. I mean, I wasn't really out to myself at that point, but I just felt that it was not going to be an easy place to be. I had a sense it wasn't going to be an easy place to be myself. So it got difficult and, you know, in the high school years. But even now, I enjoy going back to Maine because it is a lovely place and a lot of really down-to-earth people.
How would you describe your music?
Oh, I guess I'd describe it as acoustic pop. And especially this new record, I've just made a new record. I just signed a deal with Vanguard Records, and I'm going to be putting out a record in March called Dreaming in Romance Languages. And it's focused much more on the acoustic guitar. I play acoustic on everything, and there's a second acoustic player, but then the rhythms are more like, you know, Sarah McLachlan pop kind of music. So I am happy, though, to embrace the folk singer label, because oftentimes I play solo and I play with my acoustic guitar, and that seems to be how people describe me sometimes. But I think that, you know, truthfully, I listened to more pop growing up than folk, and I think that even though I play the acoustic guitar and sing, and the lyrics are sometimes commentary on social issues, there's also an element of sort of pop sound in it, too.
What's your songwriting process?
I write mostly at home. I take notes when I'm on the road, and then when I'm at home, I look through my notes and remember the little song ideas that I had going. And then I just goof around on the guitar for hours at a time until I come up with either a riff or a melody or a little hook of that can be lyric or melody that interests me. And then I'll usually spend days, you know, honing that one idea, trying to mine it further for what stories I can tell within that idea.
The song Radical from the album Truth From Lies won you Glamour Awards for Out Song and Out Recording in 1996. Can you tell us about that song?
Radical was written right after, it was like 10 years ago, and the woman I was seeing at the time had just come out to her parents, and they really didn't get it at all, and I wrote it sort of in her voice, talking to her parents.
It's all right, we're gonna be fine, but let's give my mama and my daddy a little time, 'cause I've been good up till now. They see you and they think that I have changed somehow, but I'm not being radical when I kiss you. The hollow of my heart that cries when I miss you, and it keeps me alive when we're apart. Go downtown, some people they stare, but there are lots of people who really don't care. I just want to hold your hand. I don't feel like making some big stand, 'cause I'm not being radical when I kiss you. I don't love you to make a point. It's the hollow of my heart that cries when I miss you.
And in 1999, Katie's next album, A Crash Course in Roses, contained a song that also won a Glamma for Outsong. That song was What's the Matter?
What's the Matter is definitely about my hometown in Maine and the feeling that I got when I was growing up, that that it was just sort of irritating to people when somebody was different. You know, whether it was their race or their religion or their sexual orientation, it was like people couldn't be bothered to understand something different. It was just scary and unfamiliar, and they would just rather not deal with it. And in the song, I just tried to remind people that, like, it's actually probably more effort to be afraid than it would be just to embrace and to take the time to understand a different person.
I love this town. You can see the stars at night, even from downtown, 'cause there are no city lights. This town was my biggest fan till I was who I am. Half of them are underage. People let a lot slip by when they look a lot alike. What's the matter? What's the matter? All I ask is, why be afraid of this girl? What's the matter? What's the matter? All I ask is, why be afraid of this world? Jew, straight or queer, mother of two, run around in a hippie dress, ride my bike in a leather vest. What's the matter?
And from that same album, there's another song that got quite a bit of airplay. That's the song Magnolia Street.
Magnolia Street I wrote when I was living on a street in Cambridge called Magnolia Avenue, but, you know, it didn't scan very well in the song, so it became Magnolia Street. And I guess it was the first time I'd been in a relationship where I really felt this sense of coming home to a place where I could imagine staying in this relationship for a long time, and so it felt like coming home, but yet it was like very, very different from you know, the home of my childhood. And it just felt like a very profound experience to be creating sort of a new sense of home for myself through this new relationship.
I knew that I loved you the first time you got into my car. Your cheeks were flushed and I felt a hush come over me in the dark. I got us lost, but at the next cross you said, I don't care where we are, I'm in the right car. I drove a slow down a fast food strip and you turned the radio on. I was confused, all the signs were lit and you said, I love this song. I wanted to say that I loved you, but I knew too soon, too strong. This is the ride I'm on. This is the ride I'm on. And I recall in my sleep changed my life on Magnolia Street. A dream, but it's true, I am not the same since I met you. And I feel like I'm going home, but not to the one I've known.
On to 2001 and the next album called My Shirt Looks Good on You. I just love the song from it called Elizabeth. Please tell us about that one.
I wrote that when I was on the road opening for Dar Williams, and it was a long tour. I was in Newport, Kentucky, and I have to say it's not my favorite place in the world, even though it's very lovely. And as I sat in my hotel and I watched the train, one after another, these freight trains came over the Ohio River, I just was impressed by the sort of determination of the trains to keep coming, you know, like it's like they're on a schedule and they just continue to come over the bridge. And I just felt that type of that type of consistency was something that, although I can't offer because I travel, I can't offer in my relationship in the sort of concrete sense, but I can offer it in the sense of being very, you know, my partner is very present in my mind at all times, and I, you know, we stay in very close contact when I'm on the road. And I felt like somehow those trains really reminded me of that feeling of persistence in a relationship.
Well, that song was kind of a milestone for you.
Yes, that's true. It's the first time I used gender and said that this was a song about a woman. And whereas, as I was saying in the past, that most of my songs were pretty open-ended, could have been about, you know, anybody.
Was it hard to get to that point when you were ready to do that?
Yeah, what I did was, you know, the song came to me very easily, and I knew I wanted to play it the night I wrote it. So I played it in Kentucky that night, and I said to the audience, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to play this song again. And it was actually a show I was opening for Dar Williams. And I still have a postcard that has Dar Williams' album cover on it. That it was a postcard that was put on the tables of all the tables at the show, and a woman who had been at the show wrote on the back of it, "Please don't let this be the last time that an audience hears the train song." And I kept that night, because a lot of people said, you know, you need to keep playing this song, but I've kept that in my little book where I write up my set list, because it reminds me that, you know, it was, although it was scary for me to play it, it's meaningful to continue to play it.
What's the reaction been to that song?
You know what? The reaction has been really, of course, you know, first of all, let me just say that because of the type of music I play, which is quite gentle, and because of the audiences that come to see me play, which, you know, are by and large like liberal and progressive and kind, I almost never get like a negative, you know, like people aren't ever going to say like, you know, it bugs me that you're a lesbian. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to say that to me. But so in general, the feedback I've gotten on the song has been very positive. And especially, I guess, I've been really enjoyed getting feedback from men who who, you know, that song reminds them of their wives or whatever, or their girlfriend. And I'm like, I think that's kind of sweet, you know, that that they can hear a woman singing a song about a woman and it reminds them of their girlfriend. And, wow. You know, I think that's pretty cool. And I think that's part of what I enjoy in my role as a singer-songwriter and as an out singer-songwriter is that, you know, I'm not just speaking to a lesbian audience, I'm speaking to a straight audience too, and they're learning to do what lesbians and gays have always done, which is hear a song and they know it, you know it's actually a man and a woman, but you change it to a woman and a woman or a man and a man. And you know, now straight people are doing that with my songs, and I think that's pretty cool.
At least two times a day, from hotels and truck stops, when I've been too long gone away. And I can see Cincinnati from the Kentucky side, though I can't walk between them. When I look out on the night, I see a slow train crossing the bridge over the Ohio River. She bends and she winds and she's taking her time, but nobody can stop her from headlights through all 92 boxcars. She will not rest. Just hold on. Let's try a little patience. This long is gonna make us strong. And there's a slow train crossing the bridge over the Ohio River. She bends and she winds and she's taking her time, but nobody can stop her.
That was the song Elizabeth. How about The Kiss That Counted?
I think of that as being a fusion. For me, it's both about the very first time that I ever kissed a woman when I was in college, where I was just like, this is going to really change who I, you know, who I am, and it's going to be really mind-blowing. Because I was very nervous about becoming a lesbian at first when I was in college, you know. And on the other hand, I also think of it as being about, like, you know, getting together with my current partner, you know.
I saw it coming like summer rain, incoming ocean, oncoming train. This would be the kiss that counted, the one that matters.
Is there any message you hope your music gets across?
I guess that more so than a message, I would like for people to have a moment when they're listening to my music where they just like feel very like a lot of pleasure from it. You know what I mean? I want my music to just like bring people a lot of pleasure, because I feel like life is really aggressive. You know, our culture is very aggressive, and I'm not a very aggressive kind of performer. My music is actually more like sensual and gentle and groovy. You know, it has a groove, and I guess I just want people to just really deeply enjoy it. And you know, I guess if there's a message in it, it would be, you know, I preach the gospel of love. You know, I mean, I'm love of all kinds. You know, the romantic, the intergenerational, family friend. You know, it's like I just really want to warn people to trying to live their lives in a loving way and be tolerant of other people.
Has your relationship with any of your earlier songs changed since you wrote them?
Yeah, I think that you know, I feel more bold about things now. It's like, you know, I'm 38 and I feel a lot more comfortable with who I am. So I think there were times when I first wrote Radical that I really hoped inside that, you know, when I sang it, the audience would think it was more about something else, like interracial relationships or teenage angst or something. And, you know, now I think I play a lot more with the fact that I know people know I'm gay, and I knowing that that doesn't mean everyone who listens to it has to be gay or that they have to be gay to appreciate it, but that I'm emboldened to sort of make jokes in the middle of the song about, like I'll say sometimes, and though I mind what people say, not really anymore. Love, you know.
Okay, I've got one more song for you to hear. But before I play it, I want to thank you all for sharing my 4th anniversary show. And I want to thank Deirdre McCullough and Katie Curtis for the very special interviews. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write to me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I wish you would. And again, my website with information about all the songs you've heard is, logically enough, at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the 4th Monday of next month with the next installment of Queer Music Heritage. And back to Katie to hear about the song I chose to close the show. Of what song that you've written are you the most proud?
Right now, maybe Honest World, which is a song about being gay. I call it my gay anthem. And I guess the reason why I'm proud of it is I feel like for years, you know, I've written songs about all kinds of things, like my dad and the church in my town burning down and, you know, the sugarcane industry. I mean, I've written about all kinds of things. But whenever I've written about gay issues, I've always done it in a very skittish way where I touch on it, but it could be about anything. I'm not very clear. Songs like Radical and What's the Matter and I Don't Cry Anymore, they're sort of gay, but they're also, they could be about anything. I wanted them to be very universal. But then I wrote a song called Honest World, which is on an album that is only available through the internet called Acoustic Valentine. And in that song, I feel like I've managed to tell an interesting story of what it's like to be on the margins in terms of, you know, being told to cover up your life and then being told, well, if you cover up your life, you're going to have a terrible life. You won't, you know, so this sort of catch-22 that our culture puts gay people into.
Katie's latest album is called Acoustic Valentine, and it's available only from her site, sort of a present for her fans. For it, she went into the studio with just her guitar and re-recorded some of her most popular songs. So it's kind of a greatest hits album, but redone more intimately. It contains one new song, the one she just described, Honest World.
When I was 19, I broke up with my first girlfriend because of a guy down the hall who was a Christian. He said, I look at you, I can see you don't want to lie. And if you stay with her, your whole life you're gonna have to hide. And I believed him, and so I let her go. And I cried my eyes out in my room alone. He would come by with the Bible until I shut the door and decided I wasn't gonna lie to myself anymore. Someday, well, I'll be free. I can feel it. It's our destiny. Someday, I believe love will make an honest world for me. It took a long time to find you. I knew right away I was gonna wanna spend my life with you. We took our wedding vows. We had our wedding night. We had everything except the legal right. And so we jumped the broom like plantation slaves would do, 'cause they couldn't marry under the master's rules. But someday we'll all be free. I can feel it. It's our destiny. Someday they'll see the truth, and I will make an honest woman of you. There's a baby being born somewhere in the world who's gonna need us as much as we're gonna need her. And we will board the plane and we're gonna bring her home. And that's how we'll make a little family of our own. But the documents will leave off one of our names. Your frame. But someday we'll all be free. I can feel it. It's our destiny. Someday I trust love will make an honest world for us. And to love has made